I'm never sure. It's out of my hands now, you see.
We just keep going.
Welcome, everybody, to the Outlaw Picks podcast.
Back.
What were you saying about me?
You get irritated by things that no one else gets irritated
by. You were the one sweating last podcast.
That's not through irritation.
Because I was fucking with you about
your nose. I wasn't irritated. I was hot.
You were irritated. Because
I was irritating myself and my notes are wrong.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. It's coming down. Here we go.
All right.
Crack on the war.
All right, we'll do this.
Oh, is it everything's like recording
right?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's going to stay recording, right? Isn't it?
You're going to have to get up and do your lap. Make sure
I am
going
to check it onto.
That's very confident, Jamie. Confident, Jamie.
He is. He's doing the War Room thumbnail in there for Oliveira Chandler, which is going up later today.
Wicked.
Which will today, be already up.
It will already by this before time, this, right?
By when? Yeah. Pass me sunglasses. Pass me the Fight Island sunglasses, will you please? Thank you.
Oh no!
Whoa,
no.
See this. This is and imagine the sound of that as well as this on the table.
On,
you're playing around and your chair creaking.
49p to replace. Do you know what I mean?
Come on, you got some stuff to do.
I do. Yes, we are sponsored once again by Unbound Merino,
which is why he's got 15 layers on.
Which I have two layers of Unbound on. As much as I love Unbound, two is the appropriate number.
It's not actually that big, honestly.
Even though it is kind of cold in here.
It's not cold.
A little bit. I see that. Yeah. Let's not get into that again. Let's not get into it.
Let's not get
into it. We've moved on. We've decided we operate at different temperatures.
I've doubled up today so I can match it.
Oh, there you go.
So I thought to myself, well, because
mate, you shouldn't be trying to look any bigger at the minute.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying. You shouldn't be trying to look any bigger than me.
I'm fancying myself as a middleweight these
days.
Although
I was watching your deadlift earlier. I'm getting there.
I keep that stuff on the down low, you see. See, people are watching in the comments and they're like, oh, look at me. He's just eating loads and doing nothing.
Nah. Some muscle mass being layered on it, bruv.
That's it.
So we are sponsored by Unbound Merino. We love them. We have a great relationship with Unbound. And if you would like 20% off, drop Outlaw at the checkout. And they will give you a discount. We're in our compact travel hoodies today, aren't we? Although we're not travelling anywhere.
I always feel a bit special when I put my merino wool on. You know what I mean?
If anyone has merino wool, they'll know why we bang on about it all the time, won't they?
Yeah.
Because it is, it's just great. Yeah. We love it. It's wicked. And we are also working with getfanatic.app this week. So they are a new app company that you can make picks on. So there's no money changing hands. There's no betting to be done. But we have created a full reptile picks league on the app, which if you go to getfanatic.app, you can download. And we will play along for the next few weeks, won't we? And we'll create a league and see who knows what they're going on about and who doesn't. Which sounds a little bit too accountable liking.
Well,
but
we were
go.
Getting shit, weren't we, for the...
Someone's mad, bro.
Lost loads of money, apparently.
Yeah, someone's mad. But
you know, always gamble responsibly and all that.
Exactly. So, there's no money, there's no prize pool, there's no money changing hands. It's purely just for fun. But if you make some picks on the app, we will make our picks on the app and we can see how we're going. And I think it'll be a bit of fun. And lastly, we've still got our offer going. If you go and grab one of our new Nalgene bottles, X-Brain will send you an Alpha Brain, a New Mood and a sachet of Boost.
That orange lid does not look right on me.
I love it.
I know.
Obviously,
you
green
you
and
love,
orange
you,
go
you love
perfectly
the
well
mechanism
together.
Of the lid. You don't actually like the actual, like the colour coordination.
I do.
Really?
Yeah. It's almost perfect. Not one bit of spillage either.
And you click it right in front of the mic. See, this is why Amy's always telling us.
I know,
that,
but
you know,
now I know Amy's there. She'll just like lower that down a little bit, keep everyone from getting upset, and we're all good. It's just accepted behaviour now.
You know, she's pretty dangerous, and you're the one that's...
She's also in Ireland, so I'm safe
for
a while.
She'll be here soon. She's coming over just specifically to strangle you with your merino wool hoodie.
Come on, then. Let's have a quick review. Bellator was on the weekend, wasn't it?
Awesome.
And I just love watching it on iPlayer.
It's awesome. I actually got a TV license.
Yeah, nice.
I actually got one.
Yeah.
First time in ages I've not had a TV license.
It's a bit conformist for you.
It is rather, isn't
it?
I don't mind. I want to I want them on their stats to go, this person bought a TV license and then specifically went onto iPlayer and watched Bellator.
Yeah.
You know?
It was a good card.
And
the
repair shop, which is the other thing I've been watching. I love those shows. Have you seen that show?
No.
The thing is, because I don't really watch TV, I only have the pleasure of watching TV when I'm in a hotel, which is either when I'm working or when I've been quarantined.
Yeah.
So I've been sitting there, like, researching on my laptop, and in the background, I've got, like, auction hunters or
I love property selling.
I love all that kind of... That's why I've got these fancy glasses on. You see, auction hunters always have these weird glasses on. And that's one of the shows where people take cool old shit that is means something to them and they drop and it off and someone repairs it.
Someone repairs it and gives it back to them.
Yeah. And it's like this thatched barn.
Ooh.
And it's just a great setup. Yeah,
I lived in a thatched house when I was a kid.
Did you really?
Yeah. Not round here. It was Bedford, I think.
Yeah.
We didn't live there very long, but it was like a thatched cottage. Were there low ceilings?
I can't really remember. I mean, you were probably small.
I was small. It seemed massive. It'd be small now.
Yeah. Thatched. That's something that most people outside of the UK won't really know.
Surely they have thatched rooms elsewhere. No idea.
It's where the name Thatcher comes from, though, obviously. It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We won't delve into that now. No, I will Google it later and find out whether thatched houses are anywhere else.
No, it is the Outlaw Picks podcast. I need to circle back. I've moved everything this week and I'm not 100% comfortable with it, if I'm honest.
Well, it's your podcast, bro. If you want to move it back, just move it back.
It's our podcast. Right. I'm not taking all the blame for it.
Okay. Well, when it goes right, I'll claim it.
I've done an aftermath on Bellator 256.
You have.
The three fights really to talk about. I mean, Sergio Pettis, Juan Archuleta, was a really good fight. Just a comprehensive mixed martial arts display by both guys, really. You know, just Sergio was a bit better, more on the front foot, you know, more aggressive countering. But the three fights that I talked about in Aftermath was MVP, Queeley, and Rumble.
Nice. Queeley, the pickaxe.
Mate, what an elbow that is.
Yeah, it was legitimately a hole in his head, wasn't it, at the end of it?
Yeah. It does raise the question, though, you know, when do you stop a fight? Like, at what point is a cut somewhere on the body too bad for a fight to continue? Because, it was bleeding, but it was bleeding down the side.
Yeah, well, it wasn't an eye issue, was it?
No.
So do you think the doctors got freaked out at the depth
of the cut? I think so. I honestly think so. Because, like, did you... like?
His brain ain't going to fall out.
Mate, it was just the bit where he took the towel away and Pitbull went, like, what? Why? And he went, dude, look how much you're bleeding. He just showed him the towel. He's like, I couldn't possibly let it continue.
I mean, it's not going to get any better, is it?
No. How much worse is it going to get, you know? He's going to end up looking like an extra off Last of the Mohicans or something. They're going to take half of his... It's not going to happen, you know?
No. I mean... Conversely, I agree with the Canelo fight and stopping that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean,
like, that was a structural damage thing, though, wasn't
proper,
it?
Proper superficial. A couple more on there and shit might start falling out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Just the structural compartment of that area of his face was just... There's like three places, right?
Three places,
yeah. There's not a lot holding that. There's basically skin holding that together.
Amazing. Yeah. And I know we're jumping about here a bit, but... The shift in that fight was when Billy Joe Saunders stuck his tongue out at Canelo. I watched it back a couple of times. I watched it live and I was thinking to myself, like, the commentators were divided on who they thought was winning. And I wasn't exactly sure why, and I kind of felt like they were looking for a way to score it for Billy Joe Saunders. And there were a couple of rounds where, you know, you could make an argument that he was being the more assertive fighter. But it was less because he was controlling and more because Canelo was kind of cruising, it felt like. I mean, that's just my opinion, because then when he turned it on, he was like, no,
he's just world class, isn't he?
He sets the world class.
That world class have that ability to do that, where they can just cruise and assess and, you know, not take too much damage, not inflict too much damage, but they're just assessing what's going on, and then they're like, oh, got it. I figured it right now. I'll put it on you.
Yeah.
And now it's done.
I mean, what was he when he fought Mayweather? Is he 23? Can you imagine how much he learned in his first loss?
Yeah.
And the other thing as well, there was a really nice piece on BBC iPlayer, funnily enough, although it is on the DAZN app as well, which I've been enjoying recently. And it's like a Road to Greatness documentary on Canelo. And it's awesome. It's really, really cool. Nicely edited. I mean, and there's so many highlights from his fights as well. You kind of spoil for choice.
Such cool shows, isn't they? They got a bit burnt with the...
they just got a bit repetitive after a
while. Yeah,
it's
just the same thing. Like, it starts with skipping.
And plus, they cost a lot of money. And how many fights get, you know, reorganized or cancelled, or like how many times did they make content for?
How many times have you done a war room and had to put it on the back burner?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just finished the Leon Edwards Diaz one. Yeah. Like, that's the problem with doing those shows. But when, like, HBO used to invest a lot of money in those shows, I used to be buzzing to watch a Roy Jones.
Knowing what we know now about how much it costs to create that sort of content, they must have been spending a fortune.
Yeah. Well, okay, no, let's just rephrase that. Knowing how much they spent to create that content. Like,
yeah, in that format, the way that they've traditionally done it.
Exactly. Like, that's what we actually know is that's not necessary.
No.
Like all that money was...
You don't need to
pay
16 people to make that that one piece.
And if you find people that love doing that kind of stuff, they're going to do a great job. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like, what the Raptors do with a MacBook and a GH5 is amazing.
Isn't it?
And, like, I think that's finding the balance is not spending too much on that promotional content, but making it really watchable.
Mm.
And they just smashed it with that Canelo documentary.
Yeah.
But he's vicious.
I that kind of documentary is like 30 for 30s, America's
Love
Game,
it.
Behind the scenes for a big fight coming up. I could just watch that all day, all day.
Yeah.
Love it.
Those old HBO ones, I used to watch them before going to the gym just to get me fired up, you know. But yeah, Canelo just looked amazing. You know, it's so interesting to watch how he approaches the fight. I might do a breakdown on it, an aftermath. I've seen a couple of people in the comments. But he was like, just the way he was like leaning towards the power hand.
And
then punishing him for it when he was throwing it, slipping it, hitting to the body. Beautiful pressure. Mm.
And dropping back to Bellator, MVP was not the same, but similar in some ways. He was just a level above,
super
wasn't
slick.
He? So slick.
Yeah.
Decimated the poor dude's nose.
Yeah.
That nose is gone forever.
Yeah, for sure.
Go on.
I mean, there was a point, like, as I was playing it through on Aftermath, I froze it, and there's just a moment right before the foot lands, and you're like, that's the last time his nose was normal. It's the last time
he's never
going to
look like that again.
Never look normal.
You do all
again.
The reconstructed surgery you want, that nose
doesn't
is never going to look again.
Doesn't matter.
I really like him, man. Mm. I would say I probably changed my opinion over him over the last few years because I've found a few sound bites of him talking about martial arts, and I just really like his outlook. Like, he has that bravado and he has that side of it, which seems a bit like a character, which, you know, lots of people play that. But he seems getting hot.
It's getting a bit warm in here.
It's too hot in here, is it? Yeah. Notes, all right.
Someone press the heat button. I ain't got notes. I've got those there, but that's war room notes from
I like him. I like him. I think he needs that Lima loss back, doesn't he? He needs
to, I think so.
Fight him, and then maybe, I don't know, man, either Bellator recruit some people in there to really test him, or, you know, he's got to find another home, and if he wants to be, you know, truly great and truly respected as as one of the greats, he's going to have to get tested, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a part of the free market now, and so all my opinions before were various and withheld. I want fighters to start thinking about signing with other organizations as well. You know, I mean, like, as great as the UFC is, and as you know, as much exposure as you can get there, there's good competition. There's a lot of money to be made elsewhere as well. And these are the shows that are coming up. Like, Bellator are doing great things. ONE Championship are doing great things. I wish Rising were a bit more consistent and a bit more international as well. Like, they have some shows where, like, everybody on the show is Japanese.
Yeah.
And, like, as
good
as the fights
might be. Good enough
to
go international.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
If they just promote it and maybe, you know, bring some English commentary or analysis in there, I think their product is cool. Like, Rising's a cool promotion.
Great promotion. I love the fact that it kind of follows in the footsteps of Pride.
Yeah.
You know, it's such an iconic event. But the problem is that these events haven't got a deep talent pool. You know, majority
they just need a spree, they need a recruitment spree. All of them, ONE, Rising, and Bellator to some degree. They just need to go on a bit of a spree.
Definitely Bellator, I think, as well. I mean, they've got a good light heavyweight division now. You know, that Grand Prix right now is really good. Anthony Johnson as well. It looked as good as I expected him to. And the video that Mystery got backstage of him sitting real pissed off about his knockdown.
Yeah.
Like, his post-fight interview, he didn't even know he'd been knocked down.
No,
he watched and he was like, I liked the dude. You know, we were friends before we fought. You know, he's always been a real nice, respectful guy.
He's in great shape.
Fantastic.
He's in great shape.
And he's there because he wants to be now. Yeah. And that's the most exciting part about it. Like, he's not, you know, he's not there because he's under contract, and he's just like he's had that time away. He didn't need to come back. You know,
come back for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, good on him. No, it was good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And then fight night.
Yeah.
The UFC fight night. I was sad to see Cowboy lose again. I think I've proper got rose tinted glasses about Cowboy. Like, I just,
of course,
you know,
lavender tinted.
Yeah, there you go. I've got some hotel glasses that are rose tinted instead. Yeah, I just don't like seeing him lose. Whenever he fights, I want him to win. But Morono was it was just a ball of energy and aggression. It was just a bad fight for him, wasn't it?
It's Morono's a good example of how deep the welterweight division is. Mm. I mean, he's not ranked in the top 15, is he?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think he's ever been ranked either. But he's one of those guys that's always been a problem for his opponent, no matter who he's faced. And the other thing as well is because Cowboy's got, you know, such tenure within the UFC. Mm. Here we go. This.
Yeah.
I didn't forget it from yesterday. That was a conversation we had yesterday. because Cowboy's been around for such a long time, and there's so much footage of him, and you can see his consistencies. And everybody watches Cowboy fights when he's on. You know, you know how he wins and loses. Yeah. You know where his mental state's at, and you know if you're a fast starter and if you can jump on him, you can back him up.
Yeah,
I've called a couple of Morono's fights, I think. I called his fight against Song Kanan, who's a big power puncher in that division. You know, Zach Otto was problems. Max Griffin as well is a good win, especially now, you know, he's kind of turned a corner.
Yeah, he's found some form, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think Cowboy's going to lightweight.
That's what he keeps saying. I don't know why, though. This is the thing. Is he going to lightweight because he feels like he'd be more competitive there? Because ultimately, he's not
big welterweight, though, is he?
He's not, but he also might be too old to be forcing himself down to lightweight.
There's not a lot on him. It's not like he can drop a couple of kilos in body fat.
And he's, I mean, according to his stats, he's 6'1".
Yeah.
Like I honestly feel like he should stay at welterweight, and there should be a bracket for these guys where they're not swimming in the same pond anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like Cowboy, Matt Brown, Carlos Condit, unless, you know. I mean, you could say that, like, if you put a 3-fight win streak together in the smaller tank, then you can move back over into the big tank, you know. But like,
hard sell to those boys, though. Do you know what I mean? They're not thinking about it like that.
But then maybe not. I mean, you know, like, these guys have all got to be realistic with where they are. Mm. Like, Diego was realistic with where he was at when he got put in there against Mickey Gall and
That's not a sentence I ever thought I'd hear.
What?
Diego was realistic.
Well, I mean, no. I mean, I think he can be realistic. Yeah. I think there are unrealistic perceptions of his reality, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah, true.
But I think he understands that he was coming to the end of his career, and that, like, Michel Pereira was not a good matchup for Diego, and just not ever. Like,
no.
It's just, he's at a stage in his career now where he wanted a retirement fight, and Cowboy's getting to that stage now.
Well, like, I think he wants a win, and then he'd knock him on the head. He just doesn't want to go out losing.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
If he gets a good win, he might be tempted to not risk another loss, you know? Mm. But then, like, if you think of that division at welterweight, and the reality is, if Tony Ferguson loses this weekend, he might be a good candidate for that, you know? Move up to welterweight and get in that tank with Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
I mean, who else? I mean, you could put Damian Maia in there. Yeah. You could put there's a whole bunch of guys. Exactly. Guys that are just not, like, I mean,
it'd be a shame to screw them up and throw them away. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, you're not or at their use peak. Them
up or use them up. This is the other thing. Like, Cowboy's getting kind of used up. Mm. Like, he was used to bump Till. He was used to try and bump Leon. He's, you know, now he was used to bump the card. Because it lost Cowboy Sanchez. Like, at least keep one of them on the card. You know, they know as good as the fight between Marina Rodriguez and Michelle Waterson is, it's the card's massively limited by losing the main event.
Needed a name.
And they needed a Cowboy on it. And
yeah,
Cowboy
needed a name.
Yeah.
Marina was good, wasn't she? She's just good. It was tricky.
Yep.
Obviously it was a tricky fight. Michelle was a tricky opponent.
Yeah.
She'll have to fight Carlo again. Wouldn't you reckon?
I would think so. I think she needs to deal with a heavy grappler. I think that's going to be the question going forward. But then, you know, I mean, this division's not top with grapplers, is it?
No, but they made the Carla fight, right, and it got cancelled, I think. So they must be thinking about I'm assuming she would have won it because of the loss.
Yeah.
And then if it's been made already and then cancelled, I'm assuming they'll try and make it again.
I wouldn't mind seeing her fight Mackenzie Dern. Have they faced each other?
They might be. She might be one.
They've not fought. They're next to one another in the rankings.
Yeah, I saw that.
So like that, I mean, that would be a good fight. Rodriguez against Dern. Or Dern against Esparza be a good, because that's another thing as well. Is that's a favourable matchup from the promotional perspective, because they'd much rather promote Dern than Esparza.
Yeah, right.
You know, especially with fighting style and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Rodriguez, you kind of want to match her higher against one of the kickboxers like a Yan Xiaonan, or I mean, Joanna's probably not going to take that fight because she's going to be looking up to a rematch with Rose.
Yeah.
You know.
I tell you who else. Gregor Gillespie is a machine, isn't he?
He looked really tired, didn't he? Mm. You know, they picked it up in commentary. They were talking about it. He looked exhausted,
but kept going.
Yeah,
you know, like he got to a level of fatigue, but somehow just managed to stay at his output almost. Yeah. I was quite impressed by him.
Did you hear what he said afterwards as well? He's like, "Well, I knew I had to get myself tired to get him tired."
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's you know, I think he's going to be a problem for a few years. The problem is now he's entered where he's in the rankings. He's entered the Makhachev, Dariush type area, hasn't he? He's going to have to fight one of them.
That's the matchup, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gillespie against Makhachev.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as we were saying, like I think it was last week, you know, if he beats Fahea, he's going to jump Kevin Lee, the guy that sparked him.
Right.
And now that's happened.
You know, maybe gets that back.
Kevin Lee's moved up, isn't he? He's moving up to welterweight.
Oh, is he? Yeah, right. Okay.
Did he call out Mike Perry? I think
it was yesterday, last night or this morning. Yeah.
It's that new mood stuff. I'm having some really, really mad dreams.
I could see Gillespie giving Dan Hooker a bit of trouble, bit of strife.
Yeah.
It could be a rough night for him.
Hooker stands tall. He's there to be taken down.
Yeah.
I think Gillespie's got the tools to make everybody's night, you know, difficult. I think Makhachev's probably his biggest problem because their style's so similar.
Mm.
And that would be awesome. Makhachev against Armin Sarukian was Sarukian's UFC debut as well. It was an amazing fight. It was like a MMA wrestling demonstration.
Yeah.
Gregor Gillespie against Makhachev would be fascinating.
Mate, that's probably
be a lot of bragging rights.
Co-main event? You could put that as a co-main event?
Easy. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's got to get to the stage where they start pushing Makhachev a bit. No one wants to fight him, and I don't blame him. You know, he's an absolute monster.
He's coming, isn't he? Mm. He's coming for sure.
But then, you know, think what Gregor Gillespie would get out of fighting Makhachev and getting a win.
Massive.
Well, he gets himself put in a situation where nobody wants to fight him, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're sharks in that division.
Yeah, it's horrible, isn't it? Mm. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Very nice. So
RDA would be a good welterweight veterans division as well.
Yeah. I was thinking about that when I was thinking about Gillespie. Like, that's not, you know, RDA's going to slowly...
Can't we call it that 70s show and we give them all old haircuts and we'll just do it at £70?
Nice. Yeah, I mean, there's a space. It's a hard sell to those guys. I'm sure they would not want to be thought of as a veteran division. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not a fighter mentality, is it?
But, maybe. I think sometimes
if you guaranteed them six fights, you know what I mean? So it's like, you've done all this for us. It's not a pension, but do you know what I mean? Like, we'll give you five guaranteed fights. It's just going to be at this level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, UFC doesn't exactly work like that, does it?
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, the fighters can, like, the UFC could recommend the fighters step into that bracket.
Yeah.
And if the fighters say no, they don't have to.
Mm.
Like, if Cowboy's adamant that he's having another title run at lightweight, then he can say, no, I'll stick in the rankings right now, and the UFC just match him like they would anybody else.
Mm.
But, like, that's a conversation for... Instead of the UFC having a conversation with someone like Chuck and saying, hey, I think it's time you retire.
Yeah.
Like, have a conversation of, hey, you know, maybe step into the veteran bracket.
I like it because I don't like how you're shot up to stardom. They drain you of everything you can and then you're just disposed of. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels like there should be something. I mean, I know, you know, it's not that conversation is being trying to be had, but it's being had. But like Diego and his weird mate is ruining the important conversation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I understand what he's trying to say in some ways.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you build this guy up and then you just get rid of him, sort of thing.
I actually said that to Diego.
Yeah.
Like, I said, look, like, you know, don't let the, like, the weird stuff is like skewing the narrative.
It's detracting, it's from,
detracting
the, yeah.
from what you're actually
conversation's
about to
say. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I mean, it's just, I was talking about this with the Submission Radio guys. If you think of the lightweight belt and Khabib holding it, like, as soon as Khabib says to anybody, it's like, right, I'm having 30 wins and then I'm done.
Mm.
Like, in the back of the UFC's mind, they're like, right, we need to put a loss on his record to make sure that the belt maintains the value of the championship. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Because as soon as Khabib steps out of the UFC and he's got the belt with him, like, the belt that he's left behind is no longer the same.
No.
Especially if it's picked up by someone he's already beaten. Like, so, like, if Gaethje fought and immediately won the belt, it's immediately devalued because it's second
Khabib,
place.
Though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
McGregor's the same. Poirier's the same, which is why none of those guys are fighting for the belt.
Yeah.
Then on the flip side, you've got the argument that, oh, well, Charles Oliveira, yeah, or Michael Chandler,
they come up and win it, then we'll never know where they could beat Khabib, but that's fine,
mm-hmm,
because they don't have a loss to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why Dana was clinging onto the idea of getting Khabib back.
Yeah.
Because
keeping him relevant and close to coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
GSP did the same thing at middleweight. That's why he was contracted to defend against Whittaker, and he didn't. And that's why the UFC wouldn't give him the Khabib fight when he wanted it. He asked for it.
Right.
And Khabib asked for it as well. The reason it wasn't connected was because if GSP then wins the lightweight belt, same situation happens.
Mm.
He comes back, wins one fight, devalues the belt, and then leaves. And then who's left behind to pick it up?
Yeah. A lot of games.
Being played, you know, and everyone's a pawn in the game as well. And, you know, it's important to kind of recognize these things.
Absolutely.
It's,
absolutely.
But, you know, like, the thing is, if you recognize that it's a game, and this is where McGregor's so good. Like, if you recognize it's a game before you step into, like, onto that table, you can play it.
Yeah.
And he played it so well. And the thing is, like, I can see it in retrospect. Like, I feel like a fucking golden retriever looking back. I was like, who? Yeah, him. Okay. I'd just fight whoever they told me to for whatever numbers were on my purse. And it was like.
The whole thing is a negotiation. The contract is irrelevant. Every day is a negotiation with the UFC.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's, what do I bring? How much is that worth?
Uh-huh.
How close can we get to the two things?
Yeah. And what can you do to build your value?
Yeah.
So when you step onto that table, you're like,
yeah,
this is what I've got to offer. Yeah.
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 Yeah, he was. He's done it better than anyone, I think. No one's come close, have they?
Well, he's opened the door and he's shown behind the curtain of what you can do.
And what you can get away with if you're making them enough money.
Yeah. Mayweather did the same thing in boxing. And now fucking Jake Paul's doing it in boxing. I love it.
Please don't.
I love it. I tweeted the other day and
he got filled in, didn't he?
Who? Jake Paul?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was staged.
That
was staged. It was all staged. It was the whole thing was weird.
It's going to come to head at some stage.
Of course.
And he's going to fuck with the wrong person.
But like Mayweather knows what he's doing. He's in the game for promotion now. Man. He's in the game to make money. He doesn't take any of these guys seriously.
No.
And like the agreement's probably that he's not going to just blast them out of there.
Yeah.
I think
legitimise him by taking him five rounds. Like, you know what I mean?
He'll put on a show.
I don't like
it. I don't mind it. Make some money. Why not? People want to see it. Like celebrity boxing, celebrity kickboxing. I don't care. It shows how important the celebrity aspect of the fight is.
This seems like it's trying to masquerade, though. Like being legit. Like they're trying to convince people it's legit. Celebrity kickboxing, like, we know they're not legit. They're just having a crack at the sport.
Do you think? Nothing feels fucking legitimate about it. You got Snoop Dogg smoking massive cones in the back. You've got De La Hoya. He's just practically covered in
powder.
I mean, he looks like an Olympic skier. It's like, I love the guy, but he's like, he's got to get it together. Like, they had 8 commentators, and the only one that held it together was AC Slater. Which,
amazing.
I mean, how surreal
amazing.
Is that?
That's another sentence I never thought I'd hear in my life.
It was just the whole thing was kind of odd, but it was a spectacle and it felt like a spectacle, and people paid money because they wanted to watch the spectacle.
Mate, I have no doubt it will make lots of money. It's just not going to make any money off me.
Yeah. I liked it. I watched it.
Anyway. But let's legitimise this.
What were we talking about?
262.
No, we were. Mm. What? No.
Covered off Fight Night.
I need to say one thing. Phil Hawes's conditioning is so much better than it was.
So much.
Right?
Like.
What's going on with his hair, though? Is that like, were they like stress patches? You know, sometimes you see that.
Mm.
Some fighters in training camp when they've been pushing themselves.
Might be stress-induced alopecia.
Is that it? It's like, but it's, you've seen it before, haven't you?
Yeah.
With fighters, with athletes. Like, I don't know. It was kind of odd. Anyway, it was just something I noticed. But I did notice his conditioning was much better. Like, you know, he looked like he was able to dig deeper.
I'd be fascinated to see or hear from his coaches what they'd done, because it's tough to turn his conditioning around, and they seem to have done it. I mean, it must have been a huge focus. I can't think of the last time he fought, but maybe that was it. They were like, look.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a streak now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's on a nice streak now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, the last person to beat him was that Martinez, where he got tired and head kicked in the second round. Magny and Jeff Neal was a good fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, Magny's just, it's just that pace, isn't it? It's just bang, 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 constant. Shows you don't have to be trying to kill people with every shot.
Yeah.
And what's nice is, like, if you can take a bit of that Magny pace or that Diaz pace and then put a kill shot in every sixth, that's when you start being
real
dangerous.
He's fought so many people in the UFC. Like, you go down his list, he's fought. He's not always won, but he's fought. Like, the who's who, really, isn't he?
Yeah. His record's pretty good, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he lost to Chiesa.
I'd tell you, it'd be nice. Would be Vicente Luque, Magny.
Yeah, it would be.
Would be a fun fight.
That would be good. That would be good.
But yeah, they're doing.
Where is he in the rankings now?
So he's eighth, but I don't know if this has been adjusted or not.
Yeah, it looks like it has to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it has. Yeah.
Masvidal was.
Thompson doing? Is Wonderboy matched?
I thought he was just matched.
Like, he's on the verge of a veterans division. He needs to, if he's going to have a run, he needs to hurry up. You know, he needs to hurry up.
There's a bit of a new guard coming: Brady, Bilal, Hamzat.
Yeah.
You know, that's the new guard coming up to replace those guys that've been around for a little while, isn't there?
Yep. Chiesa might be a part of that as well. Vicente Luque is definitely.
And Leon, to be fair. You know, Leon's.
I mean, Leon's
got some fights in him.
Leon's about there now, isn't he?
Hmm.
If he ever gets to fight again. Okay. What we're talking about now, we're going to move on to
262.
262.
Which we're going to do a ride along for.
We are going to do a ride along for. I'm buzzing for it.
Yeah.
I am buzzing for it. Okay. So you're on. Are you on Tapology?
Yeah. So you got Serrano and Christos Giagos. No, Giagos.
He is of the Greek Spartan descent. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. He's of Greek descent. He's leaning into that. I like it. He's got a Greek flag on his shoulder as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Bit of a decision maker, which is probably why he's, like, you know,
18-8, right?
Yeah. Are you on Tapology, did you say?
Yeah.
Let me get the right order up then, because otherwise we'll be. I thought I had it done. Thought I was organised, but I'm not. Okay. Yeah. Soriano's been in the UFC before. He lost all three of his UFC fights.
Second crack, right?
Yeah. But he trains with Robin Van Hoosmalen, and he's got good striking. He's got nice, clean power striking. He does tend to overthrow sometimes. But then, if you look at the guys he fought when he was in the UFC, Kawajiri's, well, I mean, look at that. He was 8-0 when he came into the UFC. And he fought Kawajiri, who's 32-7-2. I mean, that was always going to be a hard, a hard step into the UFC.
Yeah.
Chaz Skelly, as we know, just drowns people with wrestling and pressure. And Charles Rosa's hard as nails, and he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and won the fight with Darce.
I just feel like he's just a bit limited. Like, he seems great on that. He seems at home on that second tier of fight promotions. Like, he seems to be able to get good wins there and live there, and then I watch him, I'm just like, he's sort of all right.
Yeah,
he's just all right. You can't imagine him doing much necessarily in this promotion.
Not really. I mean, you know, his last three wins have all got, you know, a decent amount of experience. And Noah Lahat is a good fighter. He's 13-4. I feel like he's been in the UFC as well. I think he was. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is going to be a like a warm the canvas kind of fight. You know?
Yeah, it could be a bit brawly as well. Like, yeah. Christos doesn't mind a brawl, does he?
No, he doesn't mind a brawl. He needs a win, and he could do with a finish really, because he's not putting win streaks together, and the wins that he is getting, they're all decisions.
Yeah,
and but the general feeling in the Carlton Miners fight was like, oh, come on, you gotta
do something, yeah,
because he was controlling the majority of it.
I mean, his on the flip side, his losses have come to respectable people. Do you know what I mean? Like Gilbert Burns, Josh Emmett, Charles Oliveira on debut. Fancy getting Charles Oliveira on your debut? Cheers.
People didn't know who he was, though.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. He pushed your car close, like he pushed your car pretty hard.
Yeah. I think he's going to wrestle hard in this one.
Yeah.
I think he's going to try and ground Soriano and just drown him with top pressure and ground and pound.
Yeah.
You know, the quicker he can get Soriano tired, the less threat there is with the punching power. For sure.
I definitely feel like he's got enough. Mm. He's got enough in his armoury to win that one.
You reckon? So you're going Yagos, are you?
Yeah. Yagos.
I'd agree with that.
No,
So Kevin Aguilar against Tucker Lutz. That's not at all a British name, is it? No. Tucker.
I don't think there's one person in England called Tucker Lutz.
No. No.
No way. He came out of the Contender Series, didn't he?
Yes.
But he's not fought in the UFC.
No, I don't think so. He's not fought with the print on his gloves.
No.
And poor old Aguilar is on a 3-fight losing streak.
Yeah, rough.
And it doesn't reflect how good he is as well.
Against tough guys. Yeah, losses some serious guys. Mate,
again, you know, Charles Rosa's in there. Split decision to Rosa.
Mm.
Tukhugov and Dan Ige, as we know.
That's a
rough run.
It can skew your perception a little bit when you just see those three losses in a row. But, you know, they're... there's some decent opposition that he's lost to, unfortunately for him.
Yeah, he's a good boxer. You know, the thing that he's paid for a lot of the time is that he's so heavy on that lead leg.
Yeah.
And because his striking style is so punch heavy, they don't have to think about other attacks. They don't have to think about too many body kicks or low kicks or anything like that.
Just it's one primary focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's heavy on the lead leg as well. And because he's got a heavy lead boxing style, as soon as they start to damage that lead leg, it takes away a lot of his offensive.
Do you think he's got enough to turn it around against Tucker though? I think he's got some good grappling, but his striking looks, you know, remedial-ish.
I mean, Tucker's coming off two contender series decisions.
He
got that win over Chase Gibson, didn't he, in his first one? Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a it's a little step up for Tucker. You know, just to see where he's at with the guys that have already been in the UFC a while and have been in there with the Dan Ige's of the world.
You've got to feel like Kevin's going to come off those fights knowing what it's like to fight against some like really pretty much elite guys.
Yeah.
They're not too far away from the elite.
I'd like to see a bit more diversity from Aguilar in this one.
Mm.
I'd like to see him grapple a bit more. I'd like to see him use his ground and pound a bit more. I mean, you know, early on in his career, he actually fought somebody in his seventh fight called Hunter Tucker, and won by armbar. So I mean, that's something to bear in mind. you know, like heavy top game, ground and pound. You know, do something that's unpredictable for Lutz, because he's going to be expecting heavy front straight foot boxing. And he'll probably quite happily indulge in that.
Yeah,
bit of a rough one, to be honest. I mean, 3-fight losing streak, pressure's on, and you know you've got someone that's coming in to make a name on him, you know, for himself.
Yeah, he will be, won't he? First
time he's got those UFC gloves on.
Be keen. I think Aguilar might. You know, I think he's got enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
He's gonna have a reach advantage. I think he's. You know, is he taller? And let's have a look on the matchup. Oh, no, Tucker's taller, but yeah, Aguilar's got an inch reach advantage.
Mm.
Yeah, 87% takedown defense for Aguilar as well.
That's right.
Yeah, good boxer. You know, good boxer. Decent defense. Pressure, though, man, pressure.
Tukhugov was good in that fight, weren't he?
Yeah, he's good really in every good. Fight. He can be drawn into a scrap. That's the only real kind of downside I've seen to him, but... Yeah, Tukhugov's a good fighter.
Yeah, I like him.
So you're going Aguilar, right?
I'm going Aguilar, yeah.
Okay.
You're going Lutz for fun?
I always go Lutz for fun. I don't know. No, I'm going to lean towards Aguilar because he's... I just feel like he's got a lot of heart and he's backed up against the wall here. And he is a step up for Lutz.
Hmm.
And I think Lutz might be a little bit too stationary for him, you know. Yeah.
Plus, if you've been up there with those guys, everything's going to be seen a little bit easier to deal with, isn't it?
Mazzani against Cachoeira.
Yeah, right. Cachoeira, she don't mess around, does she?
She's a scrapper.
She does not mess around. That fight super that she had with aggressive. Molly McCann. Yeah.
I tell you what, if that fight had gone a little bit longer, that the doctor would have stopped it for that swelling on Molly McCann's eye.
Yeah.
It was really bad. You know, by the time the fight had ended, it had swollen shut.
Mm.
She's a good scrapper. She's got decent hands. You know, heavy lead leg again, but...
There's not a lot of finesse, is there? But there's a lot of aggression and power. She's a bit loopy, but she, you know, that's where she generates her power from. Yeah. I'm not sure Gina is sharp enough to necessarily exploit the loopiness of Priscilla. But
I think she's going to be on that single leg. I think she's going to be snatching that single leg, taking her down up against the fence, ground and pounding from top position.
I don't think she'll mess around too long standing.
No.
You know, she Mazzani's a bit janky, isn't she? She's a bit, she's got a funny rhythm to her, but she's one of James Krause's guys, I think. And
is she?
Yeah, I think so.
She's quite extreme couture on her.
Oh, right.
On her thingy. Yeah, I thought she was in Vegas. I think she's extreme couture.
Maybe not. But yeah, that's what I looked at and I thought she's pretty strong, she's pretty powerful. Mm. I would expect her to get herself to half guard and beat her up from there.
Yeah.
I don't think she would want to take the risk standing for too long. No. Just because of the aggression that you know is going to come our way could be a problem, couldn't it?
Well, she'll get backed up, she'll get overwhelmed if she allows, you know, if she allows Cashwader to push her forward. You know, heavy on the lead leg. She'd be smart to move around and keep chopping into that lead leg and then start working takedowns.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she stopped Ostovich with ground and pound. That was third round. So she's got good conditioning. And I can imagine her to be, I'd imagine to have a better body lock control and that kind of stuff than Cachoeira as well.
Mm.
You know, she does get a bit excited. And with that intention coming forward, elbows come up and underhooks can be taken.
Yeah.
Should be a good scrap, though. It should be a good scrap. But I think Mazzani's got to get the fight to the floor, otherwise Cachoeira is going to just tidal wave her.
Yeah, like if Mazzani was like sharp and straight, I think she could, you know, she could pick apart the loopiness. But I don't feel like that's who she is, really. Is it? She's not a sharpshooter necessarily.
Not really. Not unless she's taken steps forward since her last fight.
Yeah, I think she's got enough. I think she got enough.
You're going Mazzani, are you? I'll lean the opposite way just based on pure aggression then.
Of course. Of course.
Jordan Wright against Jamie Pickett,
yeah.
I've watched Jamie Pickett recently because he fought to Nchikui. We watched that last week. He tried to keep hold of him. He just couldn't keep hold of that power, you know.
Yeah.
Tall though, rangy fighter.
It's just a bit, especially defensively, he defends very, basically in a straight line a lot of the time. And, I mean, it's a good matchup. I think they match up really well together. It's going to be a good test for both of them.
Mm.
Jordan's a big middleweight, isn't he?
He's a big middleweight.
He's a big dude.
Yeah.
He's Matyuchenko, Vladimir Matyuchenko, I think, is his coach.
Is that right?
Which is a name we've not heard for a while.
Yeah. What was he, the janitor?
Yeah. Yeah.
The issue that I have with Jordan Wright, and I think we discussed this when he was going into the Joaquin Buckley fight, he's been crushing cans all the way through his career up to this point. Like, I mean, literally go through his career, no fights, 5 losses, no fights, 21 losses, 10 losses, no fights, 1 win, 2 losses. And then he fought a guy with 7 wins and 3 losses. Then he fought a guy with 11 wins and 4 losses, and then he had 17 and 10. So like he had 3 fights where he had to step up, you know, 2 of those in LFA, 1 of them in the UFC. But when he got blitzed by Buckley, he looked deer in headlights.
Yeah.
And it's his first loss. It was the first time he'd probably really experienced that like raw power like that he saw against Buckley. And I don't know whether psychologically he's going to be the same coming back. And that was something. He's a bit kind of side on karate guy, and
he's not going to get the same amount of power from Pickett, though, is he?
No, he's not.
Same star. There's some power there, but not the same like raw.
But I mean, these guys are middleweights, aren't they? You know, So what is it? Let me have a quick look at the reaches, because I'm thinking to myself is not necessarily him feeling the same kind of power from Pickett, but if he's on the end of a long reach getting picked off. Yeah, Jimmy Pickett's got a 3-inch reach advantage, but they're the same height. I can just see Pickett kind of picking him off at distance and then clinching him up against the fence and just frustrating him and not letting him get into a rhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I mean, you know, I think Jordan Wright's fun to watch, but Pickett's had 5 losses and he's back in there and he's
picked himself up a bit.
Whereas Jordan's coming, you know, he's coming off his first loss. He's, you know, he's a young kid as well, 91. Well, no, not that young.
No.
He looked young in his career, though. No, a bit like Sage. Sage Northcutt looked young when he stepped into the UFC. Like he's not ready for this kind of ferocity.
Yeah, it's another level, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, right.
Not that should sway you.
No, no. I mean, I didn't,
because I know you've got Jordan Wright on your notes.
No, I haven't. I've got, it's a good matchup. I'm not sure. I think
it'd be, is that your notes? Did you literally have to write that down? Fucking hell.
Remember, it's a good matchup.
Button? Where's my heat button?
I
was saying before, we should do a donation thing. For every $10 donated, I'll turn the heating up for a degree or something.
You do not want to see me get naked on the podcast. It's too hot.
We need a sauna sponsor. I've been saying for ages. We need a sauna sponsor. We need to be sitting doing these in a sauna. You know what I mean?
Beautiful.
Here we go. Or we could be sponsored by Hot Podcast. I'm all over it, mate. I've got ideas for days.
You do have ideas for days.
Always be wary of a person that's got comic book wallpaper.
They have a vivid imagination.
They have a vivid imagination.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is that these have got great nicknames. Before you make your final pick on this, we've got Jordan Wright, who's the Beverly Hills Ninja, against Jamie Pickett, who's the Night Wolf.
Yeah, I did see that. Right? Yeah.
That's like 2 90s movies clashing.
Yeah, what was the bike we had as a kid?
Rally Extreme?
No, with the noises on.
Oh, that's a question. Something Wolf?
Like, yeah, wrong podcast again, but Owen would definitely know what that is. I feel like it's something Wolf.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Anyway, other podcast.
Make your pick.
I'm back in Jordan White.
Oh, you really? Yeah.
Right.
You've got to say his name right first. Right, you've got to say his name right.
Yeah,
that's his name correct.
That's how much I'm backing him. Okay. I didn't think he looked... Yeah, I think he got overawed by Buckley and the power and stuff, but there's a couple of glimpses where I was like, oh, okay, he can move.
It's because he's got a confidence from an undefeated record.
Yeah, probably. Beating
guys up that have got no idea what they're doing. 0-21.
There's nothing worse than, like...
A horribly inflated record.
Thinking that you are, not even just in fighting, but thinking you are of something, and then taking that confidence, going into another situation and being like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I'm nowhere near ready for this.
Exactly. He got knocked out by a reality check hook by Buckley.
I like that.
Okay. Andrea Lee against Antonina.
Antonina, yeah. Very tempting to not say that name right. Antonina. Right?
Antonina.
Yeah, Antonina.
Antonina.
I know. Yeah. I quite like Andrea Lee, you know.
Do you, yeah?
Yeah. She's flipping that's strong, isn't she?
That's the banging.
Oh, that's minimal.
That's the banging. I'm telling you, that's what it is.
You reckon that's what
it
is?
Yeah, I reckon that's what it is. Is that what it is? Put it in the comments. That's what it is, isn't it? That's what it is. It's the banging.
Are you sure?
Yeah, for sure that's what it is.
I'm not stopping. I need to be hydrated.
Just put it on the floor or something. See, I've got an additional shelf. You've got one there.
Oh, there's not a lot of room, is there?
Yeah, no, it's because you bought your bloody Star Wars figures with you.
I absolutely did not bring that.
I'll create some space for you.
You got another mention.
I know.
I think you got another 2 mentions,
people
actually.
People love the Space Marine.
You know, Mr. T don't get nothing.
No. They don't like it.
Mr. TRT, don't get nothing.
But this is where Owen's going to correct you, because apparently it's not Mr. T. Apparently it's Beard Baracus.
Right. I was here for that conversation.
You were here for that conversation.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't.
Down real quietly. There you go. Actually, yeah, you're right.
That's what it is.
Might be right. That was quite...
How many
that
times
was relatively
a day
delicate
that?
As well.
How many times do you say
first
a day
time
do you
in,
say that
in
to
weeks.
Me?
I know, weeks.
You might be right.
Weeks.
Well, we've got that one on record anyway. Andrea Lee, you quite like her, do you?
Yeah, quite
I'm a bit confused by her whole get-up cowboy hat
She's a Texas communist girl, right?
Yeah, but she's got the...
Oh, yeah.
She's KGB and Hammer and Sickle.
I'm sure she's going to get shot down there for that kind of behaviour. Yeah. Yeah. She's on a bit of a pretty bad skid, though, right? She lost to Roxy Jojo and Lauren Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Two splits yeah, in the unanimous.
Not big losses, are they? She's not far away.
No. I mean, she's a well-rounded fighter. You know, she's got skills everywhere. She's game, but she just got drowned. But then you look at those three and they're kind of top, towards the top of the division right now, especially, yeah. I mean, where are they? You're looking at like the three at the top, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
But you've got Lauren Murphy at number three, Calderwood at six, and Murphy at number nine. She's just not quite top 10.
No.
And now she finds herself fighting. So she's ranked at 11. Andrea Lee's ranked at 11 and Antonina is ranked at 12. So it's just it's a battle to hold position outside the top 10.
Yeah, the problem is Antonina is like, she's sharp, isn't she? She's sharp and fast,
yeah,
and precise.
She just seems to get nullified when she's taken down. If you can take her down and you know, hold top position, she doesn't seem to have the get up and go to move.
Mm.
If you stand in kickbox with her, you know it's going to be competitive, but. Like Chikagian and Modafferi, you know, they're both able to take her down and control. And I don't know whether Andrea Lee can do that. But that's certainly
the
smart
game plan. Up against the fence, she's got some trips and some reaps and stuff, hasn't she? She's got a nice...
Yeah. You've got to expect Antonina to be fairly strong in the clinch, though.
Mm.
I mean, they're both well-conditioned, the sisters, aren't they? And you've got to think they do a lot of that clinch work and grappling.
Yeah. I think it's a classic if Andrea can get it to the floor, she's probably going to find a way to win there, isn't she?
Yeah, probably.
And if Shevchenko keeps it standing, I feel like she could potentially pick her apart. I just think she beats a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And she's in and out quite nicely, isn't she? You can see the crossover.
Andrea Lee's got considerably more takedowns per average than Antonina. But I mean, less sub attempts, but you know, control and ground and pound. Yeah. She's got a higher strikes landed per minute. But then they're opposites on reach. So Antonina's got a 2-inch rate reach deficit, but he's 2 inches taller.
Yeah,
Southpaw,
right.
The orthodox as well, so it opens up the kicking game.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know. I'm right on the fence about it, to be honest. I mean, both right outside the top 10. I think either of them at this stage need to do something impressive to bridge that gap and put themselves in an interesting place. And Andrea Lee been out for a while as well.
Yeah.
It's been a while since she fought. Has she not had a surgery or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember reading anything.
Oh no,
about an injury, but
her last bout was September of last year. Oh no, Leap! She broke her nose.
Right. Okay.
She broke her nose, or somebody broke her nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that?
It's more like it.
I feel like there's a
story.
There's a police file connected to that as well. I feel like it. I might be getting confused.
I'm not sure.
It's not that kind.
Yeah,
of
I mean the sort of route. Root for Andrea, if she can cut her off, if she can narrow that cage down and she can put her into a choke point with her footwork, because Antonina is, you know, she moves really well, and you know, obviously from who she's been training with all those years, but if she can cut her off, put her up against the fence and use her trips and reaps, put her in a corner, then I think she can, you know, she could probably win that.
Mm. You're thinking Lee by decision then?
Mm.
Yeah, it's a decent pick that. This next
close
one.
Though, right?
Yeah, it's fairly competitive. But I mean, like I said, you know, one of them needs to do something.
Mm.
One of them needs to do something.
Step up, yeah.
Yeah. Like top 10's right there.
Yeah.
You know, you can be competitive. You've got the skills to be competitive.
Yeah.
You know, like just do, you know, yeah. We need to see something from one of them to validate them as a top 10, don't we? This is, for me, potentially fight of the night.
Agreed.
I know there are a couple of good ones on here, you know, a bit Agreed. Later down the card, but Mike Grundy against Lando Venata, I think he's going to set the bar for fight of the night.
Yeah,
like Grundy, you know, he's such a strong wrestler, but he's quite happy to stand and trade, you know, trains out of Cowbond with Darren Till. Real smart dude, real strong wrestler as well. It's what, bronze at the Commonwealth, was
yeah,
it?
Really good. I mean, I'm excited to see him. I think we talked about him against Nick Lentz before it got, you know, before it got canned. We were excited about watching him, weren't we? Like he's legit. He's really good. He took Evloev to a decision last time out, and it was tight, man. It was real tight.
It was. It was a good performance.
Yeah.
And you know, and up until that point, he's looked really impressive. It looked really impressive. I mean, you know, one loss early in his career on Bama to Damian Stasiak, who's also a UFC vet.
Mm.
Such a strong wrestler. Plus, he's also got that mind of Colin Herron in his corner, and they've got such a good tight-knit team up there. You can imagine the energy's good. He's got, you know, Terry Ettin working with him on a regular. And I know his schedule is crazy as well. He's like up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
He's teaching the class, and then he's going over to this place to train, and then he's back over here to teach wrestling. And he's all over the place, like 100% invested in it.
Wicked. Wicked. I mean, I've got high expectations of him. I think I think he can be really, really good.
Yeah.
I think this is just a fun fight. Like, Lando is super aggressive. He clearly just loves to fight. Love to fight. Sometimes maybe too much.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. He had a great fight with Matt Favola, didn't he? That was a back and forth there.
If we were talking about fighter archetypes like we were the other day, Lando Venata sits in that archetype with Cub Swanson and Eddie Wineland.
Yeah, the gunslingers.
A little bit hands down.
Yeah.
You can see the battle-worn cheekbones because they've taken more punches than they maybe needed to if their hands were up. You know, a bit inconsistent record up and down, but he was on such... Like, he was 8-0 coming into the UFC and made his debut against Tony Ferguson. I'm pretty sure that was short notice.
Yeah, it must have been right.
I'm pretty sure it was short notice. And he nearly had Tony Ferguson out of there in the first round. But, you know, ended up getting caught in a Das choke, a Bravo choke, in the second. But then he came in and KO'd John McDessie in the first round in his next outing. But then you're like, look at that. He's like, loss, draw, win by Kimura, loss, win by decision, loss. Like,
yeah, it's not. It's so inconsistent.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Just, I mean, since he stepped into the UFC, he was on such a streak. And then it's, you know, he's
hit got that some level nice of techniques, man. He's got some lovely, he's got a lovely kicking game. He's got some nice short elbows from a single necktie.
Well, that's one thing for Grundy to keep in mind, isn't it? Because he's either going to be in boxing range or in wrestling range, and he needs to make sure he's getting through elbow range if he's going to clinch him.
Yeah. I mean, my gut feel is Mike just has a bit too much power for him, and if he gets hold of him, he's going to blast through him and control him. But it's tight.
Mm.
It's really tight. I think I'd back Mike Grundy to win it, but... and in some respects, it depends which Venata turns up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's that inconsistent. He can come in and perform really well, and we'll have a fight of the night.
Mm.
Or you know, he could get put on his back and controlled for a lot of it, and elbowed and punched to a win.
I think that first round it could be quite a fight for Grundy. Especially, I think, especially if he decides he wants to wrestle from the offset when Lando Venata's fresh, I think if Grundy kind of engages him with boxing but does it in an intelligent way, and tries to get the fight out of Venata, so he wants to stop putting his foot on the gas and being aggressive.
Yeah,
that's going to make Grundy's takedowns much easier. And I think once he's taken him down a couple of times and he's had him on the floor, I think kind of like what Gillespie was saying against Ferreira, you know, like, he's going to have to get tired to get Venata tired.
Yeah.
But he might have to work to a point where Venata's just exhausted and the fight's out of him. And then Grundy can start working him over on the ground.
I mean, I'd be amazed if Mike blew a gasket. Do you know what I mean? I feel like he should have a really good gas tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be a cool fight, man. I'm going to enjoy that a lot.
Really good fight.
Yeah.
Okay. Next on the list is Jacare. Crazy, he's on the prelims. Yeah, Jacare against Andre Muniz.
41, Jacare?
41 against 31, his opponent.
Yeah, that's a big difference as well.
It is.
those years, that's a big difference. Mm. He's fought like he's just fought everyone, isn't he?
He has. I just feel like he's been around for such a long time. You know, he was what was it, Strikeforce days?
Yeah, man.
Elite XC.
It was Dream.
That was it. Dream.
Look, I definitely remember talking about it.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, you've seen this Jacare guy coming on the scene here, and he's grappling, and like everyone was just going on about his grappling. He'd beaten Hodja, he'd beaten Braulio. They go 1-1 each, I think, maybe.
I think so. Let's have a look at his record.
Beaten Damien Meyer. Yeah, I remember him.
Arm triangle, Matt Lindland in Strike Force. Rear naked choke, Robbie Lawler.
And then when he came over, he beat...
He lost to Braulio in ADCC.
Yeah, did they not get one each?
I don't know.
I thought previously he got one back.
He's subbed some good guys, though, especially like subbed them in the first round, like Ed Herman, Chris Camozzi, Yushin Okami, first round. That was punches, though. Gegard Mousasi, third round guillotine, Chris Camozzi again in the rematch. Stopped Vitor Belfort with ground and pound.
Then he went after his striking a bit, didn't he? He like leveled up his striking a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, his boxing's always been good. He's never looked like snappy and loose.
Yeah.
Everything's always been a bit stiff, you know, a bit like, kind of like he grapples, you know, like he's got like a static control on somebody and he just kind of adjusts and controls.
Yeah.
Like his striking's a little bit predictable, which is why I think Whittaker was able to kind of work him over and set him up for that head kick.
Mm. I mean, look, he's not the Jacare of old, is he?
No, he's not.
That's just...
And that knockout from Kevin Holland was so hard.
Part of me
leans into the idea of maybe Jacare's not, you know, maybe a bit more delicate than he used to be. Mm.
And he's three in a row?
Yeah.
I think he's lost three in a row, maybe.
Yeah, I think it is. Three in a row. Hermansson, Błachowicz, and Holland. I mean, it's not like he's not fighting killers.
Yeah, yeah.
His last win was Weidman back in 2018. That's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it?
That's a long time. And on the flip side, you've got Moniz, who's coming off a first-round armbar win over Fabinski, who admittedly is not nearly as high level as Jacare's been fighting at.
It's tough to...
It's tough to gauge it.
It's really tough to gauge it, just because their opponents are so wildly different, aren't they?
Yeah.
The level.
There's a decision win against Paulo Filho back in 2014 on Moniz's record. But it is hard to judge.
I mean, look, he's a big dude. He seems to have some good ground.
Yep.
6'1", 78
inch reach.
Is he going to try and grapple with Jacare? I would imagine not.
Hermansson tried.
But true. I mean, he's 20-4, I think. He's had a lot of...
He's got a 6 inch reach advantage and he's southpaw.
That could be awkward.
That's problems. That's really awkward, especially for someone that might not be as durable.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
37% takedown offense as well for Moniz. That's something else to bear in mind. If Jacare decides he wants to get it to the floor,
He's probably going to at some stage.
Might be able to. And even if he doesn't get it all the way down, you know, Moniz scrambling back to his feet does make a lot of things available for Jacare
to take home with him.
It doesn't seem right calling him Jacare, though, because I'm not sure it's the same guy.
Call him Ronald.
We'll call him Ronaldo, yeah. Call him Ronaldo Souza. I'd like to see him successful, but I just think Moniz might be too much for him here.
You reckon?
Yeah. I mean, it just, like, you look at the cards on the table. You know, Jacare tried light heavyweight. That didn't work out for him.
No.
You know, he's picked up losses. He's picked up losses to good guys, but... That last one against Kevin Holland was punches from guard, open guard bottom.
Yeah, really strange.
Really odd. And it was like you could see him kind of slump against the fence after he took, you know, the first clean shot.
I don't know, man.
Have you got Jacare?
I don't know. Maybe he's got, you know, he's so used to swimming with the sharks that he swims with. And Moniz is not, you know, he's not been playing that game. You know, he's been playing in the championship. He's not been playing in the premiership.
But if he's not looked in the mirror, he don't realise how much smaller a shark he is compared to Jacare.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
Like that. And that confidence from a win streak goes a long way.
Mm.
Plus, you know, Bartosz Fabinski, I know he's not Jacare, but he generally takes people down and dominates them on the floor.
Mm.
He's a strong individual. And Muniz armed or armbarred him in the first.
Is it the first round?
It was the first one.
True. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, first round. Interesting.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing that thing that I do with Cowboy, and you sort of look back at those guys.
Drop the rose tinted glasses.
The lavender tinted glasses on again.
Yeah, is that the way you're going?
Yeah, let's get Let's get Jacare a win on that on that record. Stop his skiing.
Are you a dreamer?
Yeah, maybe. I'm the only one.
Okay, so Jacare is your pick. So the next fight, this is another contender for fight of the night. Chanel against Bontorin. Big fan of Matt Chanel, not only in his fighting style, but also his thought process. He's a real sharp individual. Speaks well, navigates the game very well.
You want him to go well, don't you?
Yeah.
I want him to get back on, to right the ship a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good dude. He's cerebral about the fight game. The problem is you remember him for his losses, don't you?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, he had a couple of rough ones coming out of Ultimate Fighter 24, didn't he? Rob Font and Hector Sandoval. But then it looked like he turned it around, and, you know, like triangling Smolker, and then and then Espinoza, like, immediately afterwards. And also, you know, handing Inoue's first loss as well. I think his confidence was up. And I think going into the Pantoja fight, I feel like I called that one. Going into the Pantoja fight, it was like, this was his opportunity. He's fighting someone that's well-respected. Yeah, I was working the desk for that. Like, well-respected, you know, someone that if you get a win over this guy, it's going to go a long way. And it just, like, he was speaking so well.
And then he realised why he was so well-respected.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's one of my favourites, Pantoja.
Yeah.
I really like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just rough, weren't it? Like, the Rob Font one was, you know, it was a tough loss.
Yeah.
And the Pantoja one was, it was... He just gets hit flush, doesn't he?
Yeah. Tyson Nam's a good win, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even a split decision. You know, Tyson Nam's a talented fighter with heavy hands. So at least he's been able to probably negate that the psychological impact of a knockout loss.
Yeah.
And then you've got Kai Kara France. So Bontorin is on a 2-fight losing streak as well.
He's starched by Kai Kara France, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bad.
And had no idea what was going on.
No.
He was still trying to fight on. That was when Kai Kara France did a lap, didn't he? And they came back to finish him off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got, I mean, I think Bontorin's got 14 subs on his record. Like, he's you know, legitimately got some threats there. But I'll be swayed towards Chanel.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. But, yeah, like we say, it's going to be close. It's going to be a hell of a fight. They both don't mind a scrap, do they?
I can see this being a real mix-up of ranges. I can see Machner wanting to keep it at distance and try and pick off Bontorin at distance. And I can see Bontorin trying to swarm with big power punches and clinch him and try and take him down. If Bontorin gets Machner to the floor, I think there might be problems for Machner, though. I really do. Even if it's just to be controlled and beaten up, that's my concern for him, because he's got good footwork and good movement, but that can all be taken away. And if Bontorin's in top position, he's tough. He's about as wide as this table. He spreads himself so well.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
Which way are you going with it?
You almost
avoided your main pick.
Match now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how Bontorin comes back from that knockout.
Yeah, I'm actually leaning the opposite way a little bit.
Yeah.
I like Match now, but I also think Bontorin could just drown him with grappling.
Yeah, right.
Cool. We'll see.
We will.
Burgos against Barbosa, another contender.
Absolutely.
Another fight of the night contender.
Absolutely. Legend. Edson Barbosa is a bit of a legend, isn't
he?
Like, he's got so many highlight reel things around him, not always wins, but he's a legend, but he's struggling against those top guys now, isn't he?
And I was so surprised to see him go down a weight class.
Yeah.
I mean, he was already shredded.
I know, where's it come from?
I don't know. I thought he was going to have to go up.
Yeah, where's that weight loss come from?
I don't know. He's looked good though, hasn't he? You know, he's looked healthy. He's not looked like he's killed himself to do it. Burgos is an awkward one because he just puts so much pressure on you. You know, he's such an awkward in your face kind of guy, and the thing that you always see about Barbosa in his losses is that when he's pressured, he's uncomfortable.
Right.
He likes to be at kicking range. He likes to maintain that kickboxing range so he can work his techniques, his long range techniques. Like, Khabib was pretty much running him down, and I'm not saying that Shane Burgos is coming in with any kind of real well thought out game plan, but if he was preparing for Barbosa, the obvious thing is to be as close to him as possible.
Take that space away.
Yeah. And Burgos is much more of a front foot kind of heavy-handed fighter.
You know, it's hard not to like Burgos.
Yeah.
Like,
he's fun to watch. He's a bit of a Tony Ferguson, isn't he?
Yeah, he looks very, very strong, well-conditioned. Touch of New York crazy in there, I think. Like,
definitely a bit wild.
He's keen for a wild fight.
That sometimes costs him, though, and that's the thing with Barbosa. Like, you look back to MVP at the weekend, you know, like you've got one fighter kind of trying to mug him off and the other one's a sharpshooter and sets him up.
Yeah.
Like, I could see if this fight's at distance, Barbosa would be able to pick him off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, heavy on the lead leg. Like, Barbosa kicking into that lead leg of Burgos when he's standing heavy. The benefit is Burgos, he does switch his stance. So, you've got two legs to work. But still, I think the longer this is at distance, the more it's going to be Barbosa just chopping him to pieces.
I felt like Burgos will win with pressure and durability. Like, he can take a bit of heat.
Yeah.
And he's just going to keep that pressure on him, shut him down in terms of space, even get hold of him at some stage.
Hey, he's got his strikes landed per minute. Shane Burgos' strikes landed per minute is 7.3 compared to Barbosa's, who's fairly high at 3.9.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's a massive, massive output. And they're both 5'11". They're both 75-inch reach. They're both orthodox.
Burgos just needs a bit of finesse, and I think he'd be really good. Do you know what I mean? Like, he that fight with Cavalcator was on form. He was in a good spot, and it was relatively close.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, like you said, though, he can be a bit reckless sometimes. And I think, like, against someone like Calvin Cater, who's always a front foot fighter anyway, you know, unless he's getting pushed around by Max Holloway. I think his craziness is going to work out better for him in this fight, because it's going to give him his style is naturally going to walk him into a range which makes Edson Barbosa uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a good fit for him.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. But then if he's not smart about it and he does want to hang out on the outside, he's just going to get kicked to bits.
Surely he's watched tape and gone, the one thing I can't do is just stand on the edge of range and get kicked to pieces.
But then you look at his Tapology profile picture and you're like, well, I mean, that is a guy that's probably going to stand and kick him range. Right?
Yeah, I'm what? Yeah, kick me, go on then. Oh, yeah.
Oh, now I'm banging.
I mean.
There we go.
Yeah, I'd like to see Shane win that.
Would you?
Yeah.
I'm kind of on the fence. I don't really mind. I'm a big fan of Barbosa. But it's, it might be getting to the stage where he's just not competitive in the top.
I don't know. Might go in the Masters division.
I think I've still got this perception that he's just not going to be healthy as a featherweight. And I think that's maybe affecting my
perspective. So how many has he had at featherweight?
2. Lost to Dan Ige by a split decision, then beat Macklin by decision.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't seem to have much firepower in either of them. And then after that, before that, it was that awesome fight with Felder at 242.
Oh, man, he's got a few losses, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a few.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the last 7.
Yeah. And Gaethje blitzed him.
The top of the divisions, pretty much.
So which way are you going? You're going Burgos?
I'm going Shane Burgos, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to lean into Barbosa then and say he's going to be able to keep us at a distance with footwork. It's the bigger octagon as well, isn't it? Mm. Are they still in Texas?
I don't know where they are. Hold on.
Super Spreader Saturday. Toyota Center. Yeah. Houston, Texas.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, right.
I've got my glasses on. I have my tinted glasses. I'll lean towards Barbosa. So Chookagian against Araujo.
Yeah. I really like Araujo. I really like the way she moves. She's super elastic. She's down to fight. And I think we're interested to see if you agree with me, but I really like her footwork. Like, she's far from linear. She's cutting some angles. She's in and out all the time. She's super quick.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in hot, didn't she? She came in real hot and beat Bernardo and Alexis, and then lost pretty bad to Jessica Rye, didn't she?
Yeah.
But I think Jessica, I maybe missed weight. She looked big in that fight. I think she missed weight on that fight.
You might be right. She does. She does sometimes.
The only thing is maybe she moves so much. She seems to drop off towards the later rounds because her output is so high.
Who are you talking about here?
Araju.
No, she's not fought Esparza. Are you talking about Jessica Rai?
Jessica Rai, yeah.
Okay, you said Esparza, I think.
Are you sure?
Well, we've got it recorded, so we'll see. You know, we'll wait until it premieres and then we'll see
live. Jessica Rai.
Yeah,
yeah. I think Jessica Cave. I think she might have missed weight. She looked massive in that fight. Yeah. Not massive. She looked a lot bigger.
Maybe. Yeah, I know what you mean. I kind of feel like Chookagian is, she's technically good enough to hold place at the top of this division.
Mm.
She's not going to be quite good enough to beat Shevchenko.
Yeah.
I think five or six times out of five, she beats Andrade with good footwork and a good jab. She's got good footwork. I think she's a black belt now as well in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The bit that she doesn't have is the grappling, it seems to me, to be able to ground fighters.
Right.
Like she's got kind of bookends, you know, she's got really good grappling and she's got good striking and good footwork. And again, you know, she's got good footwork as well. Mm. Maybe not quite as athletic as Araujo, but maybe a bit more considered in the way that she goes about stuff.
Right, okay. I thought if Caitlin could build some sort of tactical fatigue into Araujo and just slow her down just a touch, just take the edge off her in and out movement,
mm-hmm.
I thought she might, that'd do her a lot of good. And then she could start dictating the fight a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think fresh, yeah, I just felt like Araujo would probably beat her to the punch. She seems very, very sharp.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you look at Araujo's record, like she's got 94% takedown offense as well.
Mm.
And Chookagian's got a 15% takedown accuracy.
Yes, that's probably not going to happen.
No.
But she wouldn't even need to take it out. She just needs to put her up against the fence, pummel, make sure she doesn't get turned off, do a little bit of damage, but really just instill that fatigue in her a little bit so she can't quite be as sharp as she is.
Yeah. 5 inches taller, but the same reach.
Mm.
Chookagian's got a 5-inch, she's 5'9" to Araujo's 5'4". Yeah, I mean, Chookagian for me, she's just got like a nice, steady, well-thought-out style. Like she's got good boxing skills and she understands how to apply them. She's got good lateral movement and she only steps into range when she wants to strike. That's something else that's going to benefit here against Araujo. But then again, as you said, Araujo's kind of tightly wound. She covers distance pretty quickly.
Yeah, real fast, yeah.
Like, I mean, she's going to have a speed advantage for sure. But I think Chookagian's just, she's intelligent in the way that she approaches the fight. And I think if it hits the floor, I mean, she's got good grappling skills and she's going to be active off her back. Has Araujo ever been subbed? No, she hasn't. She's been stopped once with strikes with Sarah Frota.
Mm.
And then Jessica Rai, obviously, is, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be an upset, wouldn't it? Araujo to win that would be a pretty big upset, but...
Yeah. Puts another interesting contender up towards the top of the division, though. You know, there's a lot to be gained for it here. Where is she? So Araujo's at 7 and Chookagian's at 2.
Mm.
It's a big risk for Chookagian, this one is. You know, if you're Chookagian, you'd be hoping for someone like a Calvillo or a Maya or someone like that. Whereas Araujo's pretty, you know, she's a big threat. She could quite easily cause Chookagian a lot of problems.
You're supposed to beat her because of your rankings, but
yeah.
There's enough that makes it a bad bet, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And if I was Araujo, I'd be hammering shots to the body whenever I got an opportunity. Because that the way that she folded against Andrade when she took that shot, and I know Andrade's powerful,
yeah,
but it's very rare that you see someone reacting that way to a body shot. Normally they're able to hide it a little bit, but she was just like, "Oh my god, this is the worst feeling I've ever had."
Yeah,
are you going around for the for the upset? Yeah,
I'm surprised you're not more about her. I thought you'd like her style a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean I think her style's good. I agree she is explosive. And she's not linear, but it's less she's not linear when she's moving and she's more linear when she's attacking.
Right.
And that's where I think Chookagian's quite good because she is good at like stepping off and finding an angle defensively, but also when she's attacking, bang, bang, you know, and then steps around. And like Chikagian's footwork always stood out to me. And you know, I don't think she's going to mind being taken down. So maybe if Araujo starts getting frustrated, she might decide she wants to grapple, feeling like she's the more, you know, the more physical fighter in there. And then she's in Chikagian's guard, you know, working out of triangles and stuff. Who did Chikagian sub? I've got a sub in my head. It might have been one of her older fights, though. Yeah, no, it was one of her really old fights. I think she nailed an armbar from guard really early on in her career. Yeah, a couple. God, yeah, see. Armbars, more armbars early on in her career as well, in her amateur career.
Right.
It's just a thought. I mean, you know, like Araujo's got a big opportunity, and it's going to feel like that to her when she's walking out there, because she's fighting number two.
Yeah.
You know, she beats her. She's one fight away from a title
shot. Yeah, she is, yeah.
And she's an exciting person to put in there with Shevchenko. Like, you get her a win against Chikagian, and then, and like, you could even make an argument that she doesn't need to fight anybody else. She's beaten number two. Andrade's just lost, convincingly.
And you've got no one to put against Shevchenko anyway, so no. anyone that is up for it is...
Snakes and ladders, isn't it?
Anyone you want to feed, Shevchenko.
That's it.
She's hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially if she's able to outstrike Chikagian, if she proves to be faster or stronger or both, you know, then you're going, well, we've got highlights for the Shevchenko.
You could build it. Yeah. You could build the package around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Araujo for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it.
Oh,
God, this is a bad fight for Tony. Is that who we've got? It's Tony next,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's main and co-main now.
This is a bad fight for Tony.
Is it?
I think so.
Tell me why it's a bad fight for Tony. Because I got all kinds of shit, because people think I'm hating on Tony Ferguson for some reason by saying the same thing.
Well, I don't particularly like Tony. Because I find him weird. But you have to respect...
Does he make you uncomfortable?
He does make me a bit uncomfortable.
When he's resting the hot tub up against the fence of his chair.
You've got to respect what he's done and who he's beaten.
Because
if you just flat out look at his record, it's a very impressive record. I just don't quite know how he's done it. I get how unorthodox he is, and I get he's a very different different puzzle for people to solve. And he is tough as a motherfucker. Like, he has took some heat in some of those fights, and like, it would have finished numerous people in that division, the amount he's took, which I don't, is not necessarily a thing to pin your ethos to, because, you know, that damage is takes its toll. And I don't know whether he's the same after, all of that damage he took against Gaethje, because Gaethje proper beat him up, didn't he? And there has to be, even if that is off. So two things. One, there has to be a physical effect of that. Then he's gone from that, and then he gets completely dominated, not in the same way by Charles Oliveira, but gets shut out by Oliveira pretty much. Not the same physical damage that he took, but that, so he's gone. He's been physically beaten up. He's been technically and psychologically sort of beaten up the following time. Like, how do you come back from that?
And that's his thing as well, is he's known to be a good grappler.
Yeah.
And he was picked up and slammed to the ground. He was close in an armbar. He was close in a triangle at one point. Like, Oliveira was all over him.
He was,
And Dariush is one of those bread and butter, solid, strong black belts, medalled at the Worlds.
You know, when he gets hold of you, you can just tell by the way his arms and his... I don't know how big his hands are, but I bet you he's got massive hands, because he looks like he's got chimp strength.
Yeah.
You just like swing through the jungle, no problem.
Exactly. It's years and years of gi.
Yeah.
Like, clamping onto people. And it's kind of like a... I mean, it's a bit like a bit of a quicksand style game. You know, he just kind of just, once he's on you, he just kind of stays on you, and he adapts his submission to make it work. You know, it's that fundamental understanding again. Like, he's been competing at a high level in jiu-jitsu, and he's now competing at a high level in MMA and making the jiu-jitsu work for him.
He seems to be getting better. Like, Tony's clearly not getting better, but Dariush seems to be getting him. Every time he goes out there, he seems to be incrementing something to do with his game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I play devil's advocate for Tony, so Tony was on, what, a 12-fight win streak, right? Mm. Tony's thing wasn't, he wasn't knocking people dead with his power punching. He was either cutting them up so they were a complete mess, overwhelming them, hurting them and then choking them out. Or obviously the doctors or corners were stopping the fights. Or, you know, obviously he's falling back on his submissions, you know, his Darce chokes and his triangles and that kind of stuff. But then he took that fight against Gaethje at 249, and that was the first fight without a crowd, right? First fight during the pandemic?
Yeah,
first
maybe.
Event the UFC did.
Maybe, yeah.
And I don't think he had a full training camp for that. I don't think he was properly prepared for it. And no one knew that Gaethje was going to level up. That wasn't the old Justin Gaethje that Tony Ferguson would have probably been able
flow
to.
Bad,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Gaethje was moving his head. He was stepping off from one side to the next. He'd learnt from his losses.
Yeah.
Like, Tony's in the same situation where he can turn it around and learn from these two losses. Charles Oliveira over three rounds. If Tony Ferguson's going to do anything against Oliveira, he's going to need the championship rounds.
Mm.
He's going to need to cut him, you know, and you know, bleed him out a little bit, slow him down.
Yeah.
And we've never seen Oliveira over five rounds, and Tony Ferguson's a five-round fighter now. So in his defence, I don't think we've seen the best version of Tony Ferguson because of those opponents that he's faced and the circumstances upon which he's faced them. I think this one
is he playing that narrative in his head, or is he just thinking,
I don't know,
I got beaten up and then I got shut out?
I don't think Tony Ferguson has a negative thought about himself.
No, maybe
in his
not.
Head.
Maybe not. That the craziness might be a benefit to him, mightn't it?
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
It is not soluble in defeat, is that craziness.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see Dariush almost with the same game plan as Oliveira. Get him on his back. You know, he had a lot of double ankle control and sort of striking over the top and throwing his legs out of the way and striking. And Tony's unorthodox in it and he's difficult to truly pin down. But I can see him in that modified top position doing a fair bit of damage.
Mm. Well, he's been difficult to pin down.
Mm.
He's been difficult to pin down until he's pinned down.
Mm.
And then under Charles Oliveira, he couldn't get out.
No, there was nothing.
And I honestly think that Beneil Dariush can probably do something very similar to him. And I think Beneil knows that. The danger for Beneil in this fight is Tony Ferguson being a whirling dervish of elbows on the feet.
Yeah.
And Beneil getting hurt. But then that also takes me back to the Dariush against Drakkar Klose fight, where he was kind of backed up against the fence. Klose was getting real excitable, like Tony Ferguson does. Comes windmilling in with elbows and goes bam onto a left hand.
Yeah.
And then he's doing the dance across the octagon next. And Dariush won't be... He won't be just thundering punches against Tony Ferguson. He'll jump on a neck. Like, he'll attack a submission, knowing how difficult it is to stop Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
He'll be more intelligent with the way he approaches it. I mean, like when Dariush fought James Vick, like, that was just a create space over the top, create space over the top, when he knew he had him hurt. But I think with Tony, I think he'll respect his toughness enough to be able to think, right, I've got him hurt. Let me take him down and sub him right now. Especially after the vulnerability that we saw in the Oliveira fight.
That's the blueprint, isn't it? If
Well, both. I mean, it's both pieces, isn't it? Gaethje did one side on the feet. Oliveira did the other side on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, look, Dariush is ninth in the rankings. I feel like he's the future of the top four or five, you know?
Yeah.
But
I'm not counting Tony out. I think he's still got a potential run in him. I think he's unorthodox and problematic enough for these guys. And, you know, if I'm thinking positively about Tony Ferguson, I'm seeing him training at Wildcard with Freddie Roach and thinking to myself, okay, he's coming off two losses. He knows his time's running out. He's regrouped and he's doing things right this time around.
Mm.
I don't know whether that's the reality of it.
I don't know if he knows what reality is either, but yeah. The thing is with people that unorthodox is you can't completely write them off.
No.
Because they always have that. They always have that.
It's one spinning elbow.
Random number generator, isn't it?
That's it. It's one spinning elbow. But people remember Tony Ferguson for the chaos, but they don't think about the chaos that you see in Beneil Dariush fights.
Mm.
Because he's not a lunatic when he's being interviewed and stuff as well. Like the weirdness is in his finishes, like spinning elbow against Holtzman.
Yeah.
You know, that Drakkar Klose finish was mad. His armbar on Drew Dober was just, how do I make this work? That was a mad scramble as well, you know. Yeah, what have I got my notes here? I've got that written down. Holtzman, Vic and Klose.
Mm.
He had 5 of 15 takedowns against Diego Ferreira, who we know is difficult to keep down and control. And he had 7 minutes of control in that fight. So that gives you a good idea of how good his grappling is.
Yeah.
I mean, 5 of 15 takedowns doesn't sound great, but five takedowns and 7 minutes of control is impressive. And he does well against taller fighters as well. He's good at trapping arms and heads.
My gut feel is just this is just a rough match for Tony.
You reckon, yeah?
Yeah, I just think it is.
Well, given the fact I'm wearing purple sunglasses, I'll lean into the opposite direction then, just for fun. I'm going to say Tony Ferguson's going to catch him with an elbow and hurt him and jump on his back and strangle him.
Keep the craziness going. There's no way he's going to strangle Dariush.
You say that, but you'd have also said that before the Gleison-Tibau fight.
Mm.
And Tibau comes crashing forward with punches. Tony Ferguson steps back, pings him with a counter. This is the thing with Folk Ferguson. This is where people are misunderstanding my perspective. As a fan, I like Tony Ferguson because you never know what's going to happen. As a martial artist, he frustrates me because his skill and his experience is undermined by his decision making.
Yeah,
that's what frustrates me.
And there's no need for fluff. Like, you've got some really nice, solid techniques, and you chain them together in an unorthodox manner. Mm-hmm. You can just get rid of the weird shit around the edges.
That's it.
And you'll be a great martial artist.
I mean, he's got a reach. Yeah, he's got a 4-inch reach advantage against Dariush. Mm-hmm. You take Tony Ferguson back to when he was fighting Kakuno, or who was the other? Was it Ramzi Nijem hitting with a big uppercut in one of his really early fights, or even when he fought RDA? You know, he took RDA to a decision. At distance, bang, bang, pick him off, not be there to be hit. If he does that against Dariush...
Dariush is long. And Tony's even longer.
No, Tony's got a long reach. A 4-inch reach advantage.
Yeah,
1-inch height, but you know. And it says his stance is orthodox, but it's absolutely not orthodox. It's
nothing orthodox about him.
So you're picking? You're going with Dariush?
I'm going with Benil, yeah.
Go on then, tell me about the main event while I flip my notepad onto my notes.
Yeah,
we've got War Rooms. Well, they'll be up now, won't they?
I think they'll be up by the time people listen to this. I think so.
A War Rooms for this evening, Jamie?
Say that again, mate.
War Rooms for this evening?
Yeah.
Wicked. Yeah, they'll be up.
So this will be out tomorrow.
Happy days.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, last time we spoke about Mike Chandler was the... his debut in the UFC, and I think I painted a picture that I didn't trust his record outside of the UFC. And then obviously came in against Dan Hooker and just decimated him, didn't he? And was super impressive. There's a reason he's getting this amount of hype, you know, for sure.
Mm.
And I think we chatted about it yesterday. The narrative in this fight is sort of the bully against the geek in some ways, isn't it? Like, you can see Mike is all American wrestling, jock, dominated at high school, absolutely smashed it. And then Oliveira clearly doesn't have the same amount of power output, but he's technically really, really nice, and he's crisp and he's well studied, and you can see that he's like studied martial arts to get to the point that he's got to. Not that Mike hasn't, but my perception of it is in a different way. Charles is very, very crisp with his striking, but Mike just has this superpower with his straight left and his straight right, doesn't he? And he just comes right down the pipe, and there's not a lot of people getting out of the way of it.
There's no fat on it at all.
Yeah.
None at all. It's a lot like Usman's straight punches. You know, he really is able to nice and low in his stance, steps through, finds the chin through their guard.
He's got it back.
Yeah.
And then you got the classic sort of elite wrestler versus elite BJJ play, you know, and how that plays out. Oliveira, he seems when I watch him grapple, he just seems in a constant state of movement. Like, he's very, very rarely stopped. If he's not rolling for something one way and you nullify that, he's immediately rolling back to a leg lock, or he's rolling arm to leg to arm or whatever. But there's always something in motion, which I think for most people is very, very difficult to handle with someone with Mike's wrestling. The non-negotiable in wrestling is obviously how to use your base and establishing a base. With that is ingrained to Mike's wrestling, it becomes levels that up a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, he has a clear understanding of what he would need to do to stop those attacks from Charles.
Do you think his brain works fast enough to keep up with the attack from Charles, though? Because my thought is this: if Chandler spends 8 minutes in top position without getting subbed.
Mm.
He'll be able to take Oliveira down and control him for as much of the rest of the fight as he wants.
Mm.
But it will take him probably 7 or 8 minutes of being under attack from top position with Oliveira working from bottom, elevating him with butterfly hooks and working for ankle locks and knee bars and calf slices and trying to chase to his back. And like he's going to have to spend a round and a half up against that in order to get Oliveira to the state where he's tired enough to not be as much of a threat. That's my perception when it comes to the grappling. When it comes to striking, it's kind of the opposite way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Chandler wants distance. He doesn't want to be chopped down and beaten up consistently because his leg's vulnerable and he capitalizes on his speed movement in and out. So if he's fighting someone like Oliveira, who's got a more technical Diaz-style approach where he walks people down from a high tire boxing stance, just peppers them with shots, kicks to the body, steps in with knees and elbows, has got a nice variety. If Oliveira is able to put Chandler up against the fence and do that to him, it's going to make Chandler really uncomfortable, which would then force him to grapple. And the danger zone for Chandler, I think, is less once he hits the floor and more the transition to the floor.
Yeah,
because he's going through that guillotine and anaconda range where Charles is really good at just stopping the takedown enough to jog his hips back.
Yeah.
You know, I was remember that little shuffle he did against, I think it was Clay Guida. And Guida shot in, he got in a position, he just went, jog, jog.
Guillotine. Choke, jog, choke.
Jog, jog, choke. Yeah,
yeah, nice. I mean, it's a fascinating match, isn't it?
Really is.
You know, it's one of
it was far more 50-50 than I expected. Mm. When I first started researching it for War Room, I'm like, I think Chandler at some point is going to level change and Oliveira is going to wrap him up.
Really?
That was what my perception was. But then I sat for a day and I went through Chandler's whole Bellator back catalogue.
Yeah.
I started at his very first fight and I watched all the way through and he is just... He's super powered in his straight right hand.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did to Pitbull was just... It decimated him with one punch. Mm. And now we've seen him do that to Dan Hooker with his left hand, but he also did it to Ben Henderson as well. Mm. So he's ambidextrous with his power and his precision.
Yeah. Do you think... I was watching the Felder fight with Oliveira and I thought maybe that was a bit of a blueprint for Chandler. You know, he could... You have to be like insanely tough, and have some sort of granite head to be able to do it. But he seems pretty tough. Like I felt like that's a way I could see that playing out.
Yeah, but then if you think you're talking about the Felder fight,
yeah.
See, the thing is with Felder, Felder's got one of those styles as well, like Oliveira's. But he's like Oliveira's more back foot, Felder's more front foot. But their approach is the same. It's blunt force trauma over and over again. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
Like Chandler's more like a Wonder Boy in his approach. It's not. And you think, and I'm thinking Wonder Boy in a long stance with his snapshots from range. Chandler likes that foot space outside of striking range. Because when he moves forward with that jog, like think back to that Pitbull fight, right? It's in the war room. Like as he throws his lead hand, it's literally just a smokescreen. He jogs both of his feet
just
forward.
Just touches him, doesn't he?
And he just,
yeah,
it's like a piston. And like you think Charles Oliveira in his Thai boxing stance, just kind of walking him down, trying to pepper him. That center channel could be Chandler's all day long.
Mm.
That's my thought. I can just see Oliveira getting pinged right down the pipe, dropped onto his ass.
But I feel like Chandler's going to come at him and put pressure on him. Do you know what I mean? He's going to take the centre and...
He might do, yeah.
Yeah.
He might do. But then I think he'll still maintain a punching range.
Yeah.
Especially if he's shooting into Oliveira up against the fence. He's delaying the inevitable of a choke when he's in there. He'd be better to shoot out in the open and drive straight through, get around the legs.
Yeah.
And if he feels any arms around his neck,
bail.
Yeah.
Bail
quick. Hit the eject button.
Yeah.
Hit the eject button.
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. I think Chandler just got it.
Yeah.
Sounds like you think maybe Oliveira's just got
it. I am literally split right down the centre.
Right.
I can see ways for both of these guys to win them because I can see so many ways. Like I can see Chandler trying for takedowns, Oliveira scrambling and taking his back. Getting his eighth rear naked choke.
Yeah.
I can see Chandler getting backed up and slapped to hell because of Oliveira's pace and knees and kicks to the body. Chandler level changes and he goes straight into a guillotine or an anaconda. I can see both of those happening.
Mm.
But I can also see Chandler blasting him down the pipe with a straight right or a straight left and either knocking him out cold or hurting him enough to then jump on one of his submissions, and that would be a rear naked choke. And you've got to think, like, Chandler's only got one guillotine on his record, and it was from a position where he was up against the fence with his opponent on the floor, and he actually lifted them up in the guillotine to their feet to put more pressure on their neck. What's that? Oliveira's been guillotined twice by Lamas and by Pettis. So then think about that. Think about Oliveira being a bit desperate for a takedown because he's getting blasted by Chandler, or he's been hit and hurt, scrambles to for a takedown or whatever, and finds himself dealing with guillotines. Just because he's a really high level grappler, it doesn't mean that when fatigue sets in that he's not going to be vulnerable. And Chandler, I mean, Chandler's hip pressure in the Eddie Alvarez fight was insane. Pretty amazing. And that's the benefit of being a wrestler. As long as you're in top position, you're in your element.
Mm. You
know? It's a hell of a... I'm literally right down the center.
I'm looking forward to the ride along.
Yeah.
Watching this play out live.
Can't wait.
It's gonna be a wicked fight. Yeah. I mean, like we said, there's three potential fight of the nights on there from the outset, isn't there?
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when are we going to start? When are we going to switch it on? When are we going to start recording? I kind of want to do the Venata Grundy.
What did we do last time? We did the main card last time. That's it. We do a few, couple of the...
I reckon we do a couple of the prelims as well.
We've got to watch Mike Grundy.
We've got to. So we'll do Grundy, Venata, Souza against Muniz, and then we're into the main card. That looks good to me. We'll have to get the pizza ready before then.
Yes.
Wicked.
Awesome. Yeah.
Nice one.
Done.
The one in the box. In the bag. Thanks for tuning in. Merino Wool Unbound.
Yeah, unboundmerino.com.
Fanatics.
Yeah, fanaticsmma.app is the app, and we will get all of our picks onto the app so you can play along and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All good.
Awesome.
See you next week.
Enjoy the fights. See you at the ride along. Catch you next time.